This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, February 25th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker.
Touchdown confirmed. Perseverance safely on the surface of Mars, ready to begin seeking the sands of past life.
Last week, NASA's newest Mars rover, Perseverance, landed on the red planet after a six-month, 292.5 million-mile journey from Earth. Perseverance, which will prepare rock and dirt samples for eventual analysis back home, is the space organization's most sophisticated attempt yet to discover the secrets of Mars. We don't know what those pristine samples from Mars will tell us, Thomas Zurbuchen, Associate Administrator for Science at NASA, announced. But what they could tell us is monumental, including that life might have once existed beyond Earth. Scientists aren't the only ones interested in what these samples might tell us about the past and future of life on Mars. We're in the midst of a renewed space race among countries, corporations, and entrepreneurs. This week, I'm joined by Adam Mann, who writes about space and physics for The New Yorker and other publications. He joins me to discuss how NASA pulled off this mission, the politics of the space race, and what the future of scientific exploration and business ventures on Mars might look like. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Nice to be here.
So the video of the landing of Perseverance on Mars, narrated by those NASA engineers back on planet Earth, was almost as exciting to me as watching Armstrong and Aldrin walking on the surface of the moon 52 years ago. And I'm old enough, I should say, to remember watching that on my parents' boxy old television set. Tell us a little bit about the drama of this landing.
Sure. I'm not old enough to remember.
All right, we won't move it in.
But this was, I don't know, for me, anytime we land on Mars, there's a lot of drama involved because there have been a lot of crashes of robots on Mars in the past. Actually, I believe NASA is the only organization or the only country to successfully land something on the planet. The Russians tried many times in the 70s and 80s. The British tried and their lander made it down, but then stopped working immediately. And I was told before the landing that Perseverance had only a 30 to 50% chance of successfully landing.
And why is that?
So the way that we get things down to the surface of Mars, especially things of this size, requires a very Rube Goldberg convoluted method. And it has to do with the fact that just having a parachute is not going to be enough to slow you down in the very, very thin Martian atmosphere. So what NASA engineers came up with for their previous rover, Curiosity, which landed in 2012, is called the Sky Crane. This giant contraption comes into the Martian atmosphere, and then it does release a big parachute, and that helps it slow down a certain amount, but it's still, if it was to just keep going, it would crash into the ground. So it's got this kind of like UFO-shaped thing with rockets that come out of the bottom, and it fires those rockets, and that helps it slow down its momentum even more, and it actually slows it down. It hovers over the surface of Mars, and then using ropes, it very carefully lowers the rover down to the surface until its wheels touch the ground. Once the touchdown is confirmed, that UFO thing flies off and crashes itself so as not to impact the rover.
What exactly is historic about this mission, given that NASA has landed all these rovers before?
NASA loves its Mars exploration. We have had many successful rovers. This is the fifth rover that we've had. It is the latest and the greatest, which means that it gets to carry the most state-of-the-art instruments and cameras. We've never really had a lot of these particular scientific instruments on the surface before, but the reason that it's really particularly historic is that it's the first leg in what has been a long-term dream of scientists, which is a sample return mission. And Perseverance is going to rove around and do some science on the surface of Mars, but really it's also going to take 30 test tube size samples and store them in a little canister. And then one day it's going to leave that canister somewhere. And maybe within the next 5 to 10 years, another rover or another robot is going to come pick up that canister, take it to Martian orbit with a rocket, and then bring it back to Earth. And scientists are going to be able to analyze those samples with even better instruments. You know, instruments that we have on Earth are just far more powerful than anything we can send to Mars.
Apollo 11 brought back moon rocks. Why can't Perseverance, with all that impressive equipment, do the same thing?
Getting on the surface of Mars is hard enough. Getting off the surface of Mars is a whole other bag. Basically, you need to carry sort of like at least 10 times your weight in rocket fuel just to get back to orbit. So, you know, I think we're all sort of conditioned from cool sci-fi movies that we have these robots that can do whatever, but this is the limits of our engineering at this point right now.
It seems like just a decade ago, scientists and the wider public, for that matter, were skeptical about the possibility of finding any sign of past life on Mars. What's changed since then?
A lot of this you can trace back to the Viking landers, which landed in 1976 on Mars. And that was NASA's first real successful probes. They were not rovers. They just sort of stood in place, but they did some tests from there. And one of the big tests that they did was a life detection test. They scooped out a little sample of Martian soil and they put it in a canister and they added some water and it started bubbling, actually, and people took it as signs of bacteria that were like drinking the water and eating some of the food that they gave it and excreting gases. Sort of, yeah, later on, people said, oh, actually, no, we think this was just a purely abiotic chemical reaction. And, you know, and for a long time, that was seen as a failure and as an embarrassment to NASA. And basically, NASA said, we're not doing life detection. We're not looking for life on Mars at all. So in the years since then, we have discovered a lot of things. We've discovered we didn't know that there was planets around other stars back then. We didn't know the extent of the extremes that life can live in. We have found organisms that live at the bottoms of the ocean, outside of volcanic vents and underneath Antarctic ice. And so it really, all of those things have changed the scientific consensus on the idea that life could exist in a very, very wide variety of environments, including the dry, dusty deserts of Mars.
Americans generally, I think this is fair to say, that Americans generally see the NASA moon landings during the Cold War space race as the pinnacle of space exploration. And NASA continues to be incredibly popular with the public, but it really receives only a tiny fraction of the national budget. And most of NASA's budget these days goes toward commercial contracts. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how NASA's mission has changed over the years.
I would argue back that NASA's exploration efforts have only gotten better since the Apollo moon landings. The Apollo moon landings, by and large, were a big PR stunt. They were a way of showing that we were better than the Soviet Russians and that our technology and our systems were superior to theirs. Yes, they did a lot of great science, and they certainly explored. But since then, we've been able to send robots to every planet in the solar system. Outside of the solar system, the Voyager probes are currently beyond the edge of what we consider to be the solar system. That is human exploration, because those robots provide us eyes and ears and data points and ways to actually see these places that humans could never actually go themselves, because it would kill us to go to these places. So to me, I would say that NASA's exploration efforts have only increased and gotten better since the space race.
And so what about these commercial contracts?
NASA, again, has always used commercial companies. Boeing and Lockheed Martin are private companies that NASA contracts and contracted, even again during Apollo, to build their rockets. you're right that it is different now. And what really happened was that Elon Musk's company SpaceX came in and said, I've got a new idea for a rocket. Most traditional rockets go up and you use them one time and all of their components essentially crash into the ocean and we never use them again. Elon Musk came up with the idea of a reusable rocket, and that has really brought down the cost of a launch, because otherwise it's like taking an airplane flight and then just getting rid of the airplane every single time.
So Elon Musk, whose company SpaceX has launched more than 100 missions, has suggested that it might launch a manned mission to Mars as early as 2024. What do you think his chances of success are?
I don't think that a human mission to Mars from SpaceX by 2024 is particularly likely. Elon Musk has a habit of giving extremely optimistic timelines for the types of projects that he wants to do. That being said, he does eventually tend to actually make them happen. A human mission to Mars is an extremely big, complex, expensive undertaking. It's not just about rockets. You need to have life science. You need to prepare your crew psychologically just for how long they're going to be gone. Are they coming back? What are they doing? Surviving on the surface of Mars is not something that humans have ever done before and will take a lot of technological development. I don't particularly believe that SpaceX will be able to do it alone. If we are going to go to Mars with humans, it will likely be an effort that has both NASA and private company involvement.
And that's just the beginning of his dream, right? He wants to colonize Mars. And he said at a virtual press conference last year that if something terrible happens on Earth, we want to have like life insurance for life as a whole. That didn't really inspire a lot of confidence.
Yeah, the whole idea that we're going to use another planet as a backup to this one, just it's a very Silicon Valley kind of thinking. And it doesn't really jibe well with me. I also, all planets have an expiration date, so I don't see how moving to another one really helps us live that much longer.
Yeah, and many conservationists and others see space exploration as a misuse of money and science, considering the pressing issue of how to address climate devastation here on Earth. Are they wrong, though? What kinds of scientific discoveries have we made that help us sort of answer some of these dilemmas here?
That's a big and very, often debated topic in space. I don't think we, in general, spend our money particularly wisely. If you look at the defense budget, for instance, there seems to be places that you could maybe take some billions of dollars out and help address climate change without necessarily touching the space budget, which makes up a very, very tiny, minuscule part of things. Does space help us address these problems? Yes, perhaps in some way tangentially, by making us realize that we all live here together on this one planet, the one that we are actually well-suited to living on, that it's fragile, that we need to take care of it, that perhaps it helps us develop some technologies for helping us think about how to do that. In a way, I think I see those as kind of somewhat separate issues, or again, they're connected, but addressing climate change should not come at the expense, in my mind, of doing really great robotic space exploration, which costs pennies on the dollar for every U.S. citizen. I think they can both happen at the same time.
And what about space programs in other countries? The United States and Russia are far from the only nations in space these days. The Perseverance missions, a collaboration between NASA and the European Space Agency, and Perseverance is only one of three crafts to have arrived on Mars just this month. It was preceded by robotic probes launched by China and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. Is the United States still the global leader in space exploration?
Wow, that's a difficult question. You know, the saying is that you point at a place in the solar system and you tell JPL to land there and they can do it. And so far, nobody else has really quite been able to do it. What the Chinese Space Agency has demonstrated in the last few years in terms of landing on the moon, landing on the far side of the moon, which is not a place that has ever been explored before. They're planning to go to the poles soon with robots, which has never been done before. And recently they had a lunar sample return mission, Chang'e 5, which landed and brought back the first samples that we have of the moon since the Apollo days, basically. So those were the first pristine samples for 40 years. That's not something that NASA has done in a very long time. I would say the Chinese Space Agency is certainly challenging NASA's leadership or global leadership in the arena of space.
So, but you talk about China and the U.S. How much actual rivalry remains for the advancement of space science? Is this a real political battle?
Space has, again, it's always been a place of both competition and cooperation. Space is meant to be used for peaceful purposes, even though the demonstrations of our technology are ways of showing superiority. And so there's certainly a lot of rivalry that goes on in that. The American scientists who I've talked to don't tend to have a lot of contact with their Chinese counterparts at the Chinese Space Agency. So we're really in the dark as to what exactly their plans are, how they're going to accomplish them. And I think that leads to maybe a little bit of rivalry, but I wouldn't say that any of the scientists who I speak to see this as a place of competition in particular.
One of the most public changes in U.S. space policy in recent years was the Trump administration's creation of a space-focused branch of the American military called the Space Force. Many saw this as another laughable excess of the Trump era. But the Biden administration has decided to keep it around, at least for now. What is its purpose, and how might it change our relationship to space?
Definitely, there already existed within the Air Force a branch that was specifically dedicated to looking at space combat and space assets and stuff like that. So I think mostly what the Trump administration did was take that out and make it its own separate branch. Space is becoming an arena of potential conflict and war between nations, and not that we're going to have, guys in little fighter jets out in space shooting each other in orbit. But we are all extremely reliant on satellites. Your phone uses GPS, which requires a large and sophisticated network of satellites that are in orbit around the Earth. Both China and Russia have demonstrated the ability to blow up satellites in space on their own satellites. I think that's something that worries a lot of people, because if suddenly our military and our soldiers were not able to communicate, we're not able to tell where they were in the world because GPS was down, that has effects here on Earth for combat on Earth. So space is becoming more and more, again, an arena for warfare.
So with all of these developments, do you think it's still possible to recapture the romance of space exploration, the kind of thing back, when H.G. Wells wrote The War of the Worlds and early science fiction about life on Mars?
I think space always is going to have some amount of romance. You know, space, we're humans and our ideas are still rooted in kind of these ancient metaphors, that the sky and the heavens are places that we've always placed our hopes and dreams. We've looked to the stars, all of these things that are just natural parts of our language. Even today, a lot of people do say that space is something that gives them hope, a way to break away from our earthly problems. And maybe even if it's just for a second where you look at a picture that a robot took on the surface of Mars and think, wow, Hopefully that can help you deal with everything else that's going on in your life. Again, even if just for a second.
Thanks so much, Adam.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Adam Mann is a space and physics reporter who has written for The New Yorker, The New York Times, National Geographic, Scientific American, and Wired. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Alex Barron and Kylie Warner for newyorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.